Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's finish up a couple of odds and ends just to wrap up some of the laws as they relate to the kitchen. Some of the things that we're going to do today relate to things much wider, larger reaching than the kitchen, but I'm going to try to stay focused so that we will focus on that. There are other things as well, but let's just pick up with a couple things. So number one on the list is Hatzmana. If you did have your sheets from last week, it's actually spelled out a little bit. Oh, I wanted to finish, and you just reminded me, seeing your face sitting there. I wanted to go over the issue with the apples, the baked apples in the oven, and you can. So in other words, if you have your oven go off at whatever time the timer goes off, so that the time that you're opening up your oven, the oven is already off, you may take out some of the food and leave the rest of the food in and close your oven door. Because the food is already fully cooked, so there's no issue of actually cooking, and the fact that the oven is off, so that when you close it up again, I don't need a blech, which you don't have in an oven. There's no way to really create a blech over an oven, but you don't need a blech because it's off already. You'd only need a blech if the oven were to be on, in which, you know, there's the two ways of creating a blech are either covering the coals or removing the coals. And in fact, you remove them, so the blech is already considered there, and it's ready fully cooked, so there's actually no problem with doing so if you so desire. And Greens are serving baked apples hot Friday night.
Only if I get to the farmer's market.
Okay, everybody's invited to partake. Hot Friday night, yeah.
So you can open the oven, take the meat out. When the oven is off, can you take out, can you open the oven and put something in?
No. 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 This is only, for those who were not here last week, this is only food is in already before Shabbos. You have it set to a time and the timer goes off. You now can open the oven. Right, for those who are coming, this is like a specific issue. I just want to be very, very clear what I'm saying here. Food is in before Shabbos. Oven has gone off. Then you're allowed to open up your oven to take food out. And you can close it back, leaving food in. I mean, you can never, ever, ever on Shabbos put food into an oven. Because it looks like cooking is going to be a whole separate. We don't put food into an oven on Shabbos. But if the oven is off and the food is already in, you'll have to reshut the door, leave that in there until dessert, and then you can serve your hot baked apples.
But
right. So you're not allowed to...
The coals are out.
Right.
Why couldn't I take the two challahs that I have already wrapped in aluminum foil and stick them in the oven?
Okay, so that was the issue of nechsei kimavasho. It looks like you're cooking.
But the coals are out.
Yeah, that is for chazarah. In other words, there are two issues. There's shahiya, there's leaving food on an open flame, and then there's returning food to a flame. And those are separate because when you return food out of the refrigerator, we have a different concept of it looks like you're cooking. So an oven, even though it's turned off, if it's still hot, I am pretty sure.
The oven would be hot, but it's off.
You're not.
I'm just thinking, you know, and I've done it before. I have forgotten to put the challahs, and they're on the counter. But
right.
You forget to put them in. You know, and there you go. But it's off.
I'm not sure. I think, yeah. I know if you go through the five requirements for chazara, which are on your sheets from last week.
Right.
So the only issue, you haven't fulfilled them, but the oven is. I just think because it's still hot, I think you're not going to be able to do it.
Okay.
So the baked apples I'll give you, but your challah I'm not ready to do.
Go figure.
Okay. Do I miss another question? Okay, let's go. So number one on the list is Hatzmana. Hatzmana means insulating. This is going to be the last little bit from the Bishul discussion, which you have the cooking concept. So Hatzmana means to insulate. So the sages were also concerned amongst the prohibitions that they initiated and instituted was to insulate. One's not permitted to insulate food on Shabbos. There are two categories, two basic categories of insulating. One is insulating in a way that simply retains heat, and one is insulating in a way that will increase heat. In the times of the Talmud, they actually had different types of materials which did that. For our purposes, you're either insulating when a food item or a pot is on a heat source, so that when you insulate, because there's already a heat source there, be it an urn, be it a blech, wherever the food is, hot plate, when you insulate and there's a heat source, it's going to increase heat. And then there's insulating, which is just to maintain heat. I just want to wrap a soup pot that's off of the fire in towels or something in silver foil to maintain heat. The way that this works is as follows. If you're insulating something where there is a heat source, so that you're going to increase the heat, you cannot even do that before Shabbos and leave it through Shabbos. So that, meaning if the food is on a heat source, be it on a blech, be it on a hot plate, wherever it is, you cannot completely insulate that product, that food, that pot, even from before Shabbos, and then leave it on Shabbos in that insulated state.
But the operative word here was completely.
Correct.
The sides are open.
Yes.
Okay.
Why, though, can't you completely do it?
Because there, one of the rabbinic prohibitions is amongst the rabbinic prohibitions of cooking, in terms of dealing with people stoking the fire, they're just afraid of it. They instituted certain rabbinic prohibitions is completely insulating something from before Shabbos. Let me just finish up. We'll give practical examples, and then you'll figure. If it is no longer on a heat source, then you are allowed to completely. Then you are allowed to insulate it from before Shabbos completely, but not on Shabbos. So that once Shabbos starts, you cannot then wrap everything up in a towel, completely insulating your soup pot. Meaning as follows. We'll give it just a practical example. We'll talk about a soup pot. The most common example this Friday night, soup pot. If you have your soup pot on the blech, and you're going to leave it there to serve Friday night, you may not completely cover your soup pot with towels to keep it warm, as long as it's on the blech. Even though you're doing that action before Shabbos, and you're going to leave it to Shabbos, you cannot leave that situation as it is as Shabbos starts, because you're completely enwrapping your soup pot, and it's on a blech from before Shabbos. If you turn the soup pot, you turn the blech off before Shabbos, you turn the fire off, you take the soup pot off of the fire before Shabbos, then you can completely cover your soup pot in a towel, completely wrap it up, because it's no longer on a heat source, and then you're completely permitted to wrap it up to maintain the heat. If Shabbos has already started, and you're taking it off of the fire, so then you can't completely wrap it up. That's where the prohibition is. You're not allowed to completely wrap something once Shabbos starts. Those are the three categories. I hope that wasn't too confusing. I'm going to go over them again really quickly. If the pot is still on the fire, then even from before Shabbos, you can't completely wrap it up. If it's off the fire, and you're still before Shabbos, then you can completely wrap it because it's off the fire, and you can completely wrap it because it's still before Shabbos. Once Shabbos starts, then even if it's off the fire, you cannot completely wrap it up. You'd have to leave one side open. So that if your soup pot is, if Shabbos already started, you lit candles, and you realize, you turn the fire off, but you forgot to wrap it, but you want to wrap it to keep it warm, but it's already Shabbos, so you can throw a towel over, but one side of the pot has to be left uncovered because Shabbos has already started. If you remember to do this before you lit candles, then you can even completely drape it in towels, turn off the fire, and light your Shabbos candles, because since it's before Shabbos, you can completely do that. Is that clear? Is that confusing? If I had an animated screen here, it would be a lot clearer, but I
yeah, yeah. We need a diagram of how much of that side can be left open.
Something significant. Well, if you looked at it, you'd see it's not completely covered.
Pardon?
Something obvious. If you looked at it, you'd say
it's
not completely.
Yeah. Bit of the pot.
I can see that it's not completely covered.
If it's a pot this big and you leave a slit open so that it's exposed to the
something exposed. If you looked at it, you would say there's no like centimeter or inches. You look at it, you'd say that's not completely covered. There's something that's open.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have one of those like glass stove tops.
Mm-hmm.
So it retains heat even when it's off. It shows like hot burner for a while because it retains heat. On one of those, can I turn it off before Shabbos, cover it completely, but leave it right on the spot?
There's still heat coming off of the...
Still heat,
yeah, if there's still heat, anything where there's still heat coming off, then you couldn't cover, right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
What is the difference? You have an oven which is enclosed.
Oh, because it's not completely enclosed, it's not insulated.
No, it is insulated.
No, what I mean to say is that the prohibition of insulating is where your insulating material is going directly on your pot. Close, it's touching it.
So if you took a box and put it over your soup.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
And
I don't know how
insulated the box, you'd be fine.
Correct.
Even though it's
that's
stopped.
Correct. Right. In other words, because that's already enough, that kind of thing is, in other words, all these rabbinic prohibitions are to remind you not
so
to do something. Right. In other words, it's to remind you not to do something. If you're insulating a pot of soup and you came up with that kind of box, you'd be like, I'd say, what in the world are you doing? And you'd respond to me, oh, it's Shabbos, that's why I'm doing that. That's enough to remind you not to do something you can't do with the flame. Because you would never insulate your soup pot normally with a box that goes on top of the pot and then put towels on top of that. You'd put towels on top of your pot. So the fact that you're doing it like that is enough of a recognition that reminds you, it's Shabbos, I do things differently, and it will remind you not to stoke the coals or do anything else that you couldn't do on Shabbos.
But there are no coals to stoke if the flame is off anyway.
Right. Well, before Shabbos, you could have done it even completely.
No, but on Shabbos,
you can't completely cover it. Right. There are other prohibitions that they were concerned with as far as the bishop goes.
So the airspace.
Yeah, you must. Airspace would avoid the prohibition of insulating.
Okay.
All right, let's move on because we've got lots of other stuff to cover. Hachana. Okay, number two is another major prohibition that comes up specifically in many aspects. Again, we're going to try to focus specifically on the kitchen is Hachana. The sages prohibited this act of preparing, using Shabbos to prepare for something that will take place after Shabbos. Even though the act that you're doing is not inherently prohibited, you can go through all of Hilchos Shabbos, all of the laws, there's no malacha, there's no prohibition, I'm not doing anything wrong, but what you are doing is that you're using Shabbos to prepare for a weekday. And the sages said, we're going to prohibit any activity, even though I'm setting the table, I'm just arranging some chairs. I'm not doing anything prohibited, but what you're doing is for some other day. So the sages prohibited using Shabbos as a day to prepare for another day. Similarly, they prohibited using Yontif to prepare for Shabbos, or Shabbos to prepare for Yontif, or Yontif to prepare for Yontif. Each day is its own day of sanctity, and in order to maintain the sense of the sanctity of the day, so you can't use that day to prepare for another day. The most common example in our regular world will be from Shabbos, using it for after Shabbos, but this is why the second days of Yontif are always so late, because you can't start heating up your food even though you're allowed to cook on Yontif, but you can't use the first day of Yontif to set the table or prepare the food for the second day of Yontif. So everything has to wait until the second day of Yontif, and by the time you light candles it's already really late. That's all because of this rabbinic concept of Hachana, of not using a day of sanctity to prepare for another day. Now, in order to be prohibited to classify itself as an act of Hachana, it has to be considered some minor form of exertion. What we're going to see is there's some acts, you didn't do anything. You have to do something to be considered preparing from one day to the next, and it has to be, in letter C, self-evident that it's being done in preparation for after Shabbos. As we'll see, certain actions, if I would look at you and I would say, hey, what are you doing? You wouldn't say, I'm preparing for tonight. It's just in the course of regular daily living, we do certain things. Even though, technically speaking, it is preparing for some future event, we don't view it that way. Just as an example right now, putting food back into the refrigerator. Like after you took out the milk. Or after you took out the, let's, milk is a bad example because it would spoil. That's going to get into another issue why you're allowed to do it. You took out something from the fridge, it's not going to spoil in the next 2 hours. Shabbos is going to, but you put it back in the fridge. They say, why are you allowed to do that? Aren't you preparing for after Shabbos that you're putting it away? So we don't, like, that's not an act of, no one would view putting something back into a refrigerator, even though it wouldn't spoil if it was left out, but that's not preparing for something. That's just normal. That's how we go about our day. It has to be, what we're seeing, in order to be prohibited, it has to be where if I looked at you, I would say, oh, you're setting the, oh, you're having a party on Saturday night. I see you're setting the table. Oh, that's clearly an act of preparing for something, putting something back in the refrigerator. We're going to go through the examples. It has to be evident that what you're doing is an act of preparation. It has to entail some form of exertion. Just skipping down to D to get the other side before we go through the examples. A simple, routine, effortless activities done as a matter of course are all okay. You have to be preparing in order to be considered preparing. Let's just go through some examples. To explain. Let's actually start with D, the things that are okay, just to sort of express what it is that we're talking about. Bringing home a talus bag from shul, for example. Technically, one can ask, why are men allowed to carry their talus bag back home? Aren't they just, they don't need it for the rest of the day, so aren't they just bringing it home to prepare for the following week that they'll have it when they need it? The answer is technically yes. But that's not, no one would say that they're preparing it. Well, I took my talus to shul, I'm going to bring it back home with me. That's a matter of regular daily living, a kind of activity, and therefore it doesn't qualify as an act of preparation. Even though one can look at it and say that it is, it's therefore not. Same thing would be taking a key or a sweater on Shabbos afternoon. You're going to visit a friend for Shabbos Shuddis, and you have no intention on coming home during Shabbos. You're going to wait till the end of Shabbos and get a ride. and you say, it might get cold later, or I need to have a key, how am I going to get home after Shabbos ends? You say, well, why do you have to bring a key? If you bring a key, you're going to lock your door on Shabbos, and your key is you're preparing that you should have it for after. So we don't look at it that way, because in the course of normal everyday routine, no one would say, I'm like preparing for something. When I lock my door, I take a key. Whether I'm coming back in 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or in 2 weeks, that's not considered an act of preparation. That's just considered a normal thing. So if you're afraid it's going to get cold later, even if later is going to be maybe after Shabbos, you're allowed to take your sweater, you're allowed to take your coat, you're allowed to take your key. All of those things are not considered acts of preparation. Similarly, returning food to the refrigerator or even the freezer after a meal is okay. I add the word freezer. This is an interesting halacha. Once your food is out, you served the Shabbos, now you want to put things away. You're allowed to put things away. There's cleaning up is not an act of preparation, just in terms of putting things away. So there's no difference between putting something in the refrigerator, putting it in the freezer. I'm allowed to clear my space. I don't have to leave all my food out over the course of Shabbos, and therefore it's not considered an act of preparation to put it away. If I choose to put it in the freezer, or if I have to put it in the refrigerator, or I have to put it in the cabinet, either one of those are the same, and you're allowed to move it from your cabinet into your freezer. If you have something in your refrigerator and you want to move it to your freezer, that's already a different story. That's not so simple that you'd be allowed to do that on Shabbos, to take something from your refrigerator and put it into your freezer. And why are you doing that on Shabbos? Unless you could tell me, the response that would be, I'm clearly trying to prepare this for a much later date as opposed to right now. But once it's out and you want to put it away, you're allowed to put something away in the refrigerator, you're allowed to put it away in your freezer. Those things are completely okay. Similarly, putting books away, all of those things, even though you might look at them and say it's preparing, it's not really preparing, I'm just cleaning up. And there's a difference between something that's self-evident as preparing, and I want my house to look tidy, I want things to look neat, and you're allowed to do that. Similarly, making a bed to look nice. Look at what it is that you're doing and saying, are you preparing or are you straightening up? So I'm not required to live in a messy room, in a messy house. It's allowed to be neat. That's part of the glory of Shabbos, that your house should be neat, and therefore don't allow anyone to say to you, I'm not cleaning up because I don't want to be involved in Hachana and Rever. That's not a good excuse. If you want the room to be neat, you're absolutely allowed to clean up, you're allowed to make your bed, you're allowed to straighten up your room. The only time where we deal with this is, as we'll see in a moment, after Shalosh Shodis, if you don't need the room or the space, and then cleaning up would only be in the sense of cleaning up. But during the course of Shabbos, even if there's only an hour left, 2 hours left, it's a normal behavior to want to live in a neat area, and cleaning up is not an act of hachana. As long as you have any need whatsoever to be in the area where you are, it would make sense that you want it to be straight, and therefore that's not considered preparing. Similarly, taking a nap. This is a big one. You are allowed to take a nap on Shabbos. Yes, indeed. I remind myself of that every week, that I'm allowed to, even though it doesn't often happen, but it's still okay. One is allowed to take a nap. But what one is not allowed to do is to say explicitly, I need to be up late tonight, so I'm going to take a nap now. Taking a nap on Shabbos is a normal thing. That's okay, that's part of Onek Shabbos. But if you're using it to prepare, so then there's a fine line between being engaged in a normal activity, and it looks like a regular Shabbos activity, and stating, in other words, you can create something into hachana, into preparing something with your words. You've just changed a normal Shabbos afternoon activity into an act of preparation. Therefore, that's actually not okay. This becomes very relevant. We're going to have Pesach is going to be only 6 or 7 weeks away. So this year the Seder is Friday night, which means that everyone's going to be exhausted. They're going to be a shmata all day Friday, preparing for all week. Then the Seder is till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and you've got to do it again on Saturday night. Right? So you're thinking, well, Friday afternoon, Shabbos afternoon, it's going to be a long afternoon. Mincha's not going to be till whatever time it is, 7:30. So you say, I'll take a nap because I'm exhausted, and I got another late night, and I can't even set my table, so I might as well go to sleep, because I can't even set my table anyway. So you can and you should go to sleep on Shabbos afternoon, but you may not say, everybody, we have a second Seder tonight, it's going to be a late night, take your naps now that you can stay. You're not allowed to say those words, because then you're using Shabbos to prepare. If you suggest to everybody that they look exhausted and you think it would be a good idea for them to rest on Shabbos, that's fine because you're allowed to rest on Shabbos, but you can't say the word that I'm doing this specifically for something. You can't say I have a shift later tonight, I'm doing this later tonight, I need to rest now, because all of that becomes hachana. But just time to take a nap, you certainly can do. So far so good? Okay, let's go back up to see the issues which will be considered preparing. Okay, so washing the dishes for after Shabbos is always a big thing. Now, this is, here we're going to have the same issue that we always have in terms of define what it is that you're doing. In other words, I have a mess. I just served Shabbos lunch. I just served Friday night. So, like, what do I need to do with this? So there's no halacha that says you must leave your house a mess till the end of Shabbos. You're allowed to clean. You're just not allowed to prepare. So it's always going to come down to what is it that we're doing? Why is it that we're doing what it is that we're doing? And we'll determine very simply whether or not we are cleaning and straightening up or we are preparing. So if you need dishes over Shabbos, it's Friday night, you just served a meal, and you're going to serve another meal the following day. So you're allowed to wash your dishes on Shabbos. You have to wash them in a correct manner. You can't use hot water. You can't use a sponge. You have to worry about other Shabbos issues. But as far as preparing, there's no problem washing your dishes on Friday night if you need them on Shabbos. And you don't have to be so exact if you have settings for 12 and you served six, Friday night, and you're not sure exactly how many are coming. You don't have, I need my dishes for tomorrow. I can wash my dishes and have them ready for tomorrow. That is not a problem to do. If you don't need them on Shabbos, you have no intention of serving a Shabbos afternoon meal, or you're after your Shabbos afternoon meal, and you have no intention of serving a meal for Shalosh Shudos, so you're planning on eating a paper, so then washing your dishes would be an act of Hachana, because since you don't need these for Shabbos, so like, why are you washing your dishes? Well, because you want them to be clean and be ready for the next time that you'll need them, which will be sometime after Shabbos, and now you're spending time on Shabbos using them to prepare for after Shabbos. Yeah?
Isn't there an element, though, being able to enjoy your Shabbos more if your house is clean, so you clean your dishes even though you don't need them?
Okay, so
get them clean.
So here's the issue in terms of there's getting them out of my way that they should be not disturbing my Shabbos and actually cleaning them. So it's an easy argument to make that I have a right to get my dishes out of the way, that my kitchen should be clean, and not actually be cleaning them, that they should be prepared for.
No, you wash your dishes with soap and water, you put them in your little drying rack, and it's Saturday lunch. And you may or may not put them up, depending on if you're in the kitchen when they dry or when you dry them. And it's not...
The issue is tidiness and cleanliness.
Right. In other words, it makes you, the rest of the week you don't have dishes hanging out all the time, so you clean them.
You have one sink, and you have a sink full of dishes. And
right.
It's not a matter of rinsing them off and stacking them. It's a matter of getting them out of there.
Yeah.
And
so
you're not going to get them out of there unless they're clean.
So generally, I hear where you're coming from. In other words, the way that
it's... You make ice because you're miserable for Shabbos to make yourself better. Can you for your guests to make ice?
Yeah, 100%. We'll
so
get to that.
This is the same concept. Just you don't need it.
So it's generally, in other words, the general way that that's dealt with on Shabbos is getting them away, which would be putting them somewhere out of the way, which would be using your oven. A lot of people use an oven as just a storage to stack them, or your dishwasher as a place to stack them to get them out of the way. But I'm not using, in other words, if I can accomplish that sense of tidiness, and I don't have to spend the time cleaning them, so I'm not using Shabbos to clear, I could accomplish the same thing without spending the time and exerting the effort to clean if I'm just looking for something to be tidy.
No, there's a...
Why would it be any different if you put them in your dishwasher and you didn't see them anymore?
Level of if you know you have, if you know you're making, if you know you're not really accomplishing anything, in other words, there's stacking dishes...
Right, you don't need to accomplish, you just need to have your house be tidy.
That's what I'm saying. Tidy to me is clean dishes, not dirty dishes, regardless of where they are. Clean dishes put up are better than clean dishes...
If I took them out of your house, so your house wouldn't feel tidy?
If you took them out of the house, but clean dishes is the issue.
Yeah, it's a tough argument to make.
No, I think that isn't.
Okay, we'll make it afterwards. I don't want to take up everybody else's time. We're happy to debate it, but I'm saying...
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so... So let's talk about putting things in the dishwasher, which is the big issue, which also always comes up. So that's exactly what I was saying in the sense, yeah.
So you're supposed to
clean
your dishes.
Are you
allowed to rinse them off?
So you have the issue with the dishwasher. What do I do with all of my dishes? It's Friday night or it's Shabbos day. Either way, I got all of this mess, and I don't want to have a mess, which is totally within all of our rights not to live in a in a pigsty. So we got to put the dishes somewhere. So there are many who stack them in the oven. You have a dish pan set aside, put them in your sink if you don't mind having them in your sink, but most people don't. And you can use your dishwasher as well for that purpose. The dishwasher is just as fine a storage place as anywhere else to clear the dishes out of the way. The only issue is, as always, it has to be that I'm not using my dishwasher to prepare for my ability to wash them after Shabbos. I'm just using it as a storage area. So the way that that would manifest itself is usually in the way that we put it in. If you're putting in your dishes just to use it as a storage place, so then they don't go in a way that you're ready to just turn it on as soon as Shabbos ends, because we load dishes in a certain way when you're using it as a dishwasher, and you throw a load of them in a different way and you're just looking to clear the area. But it's not a problem to put them in a dishwasher, so you can put them there as long as there's something that needs to be done after Shabbos to get it ready for use, whether or not it's moving things around. You also have to be careful about borer and sorting issues in terms of if you normally like to have all of your forks in one area and all of your knives in one area. That also, I could use my things to stack, so I can grab a handful of silverware and put them wherever they go, even though that might be a little bit easy for me after Shabbos. But basically what I'm using my dishwasher is as another storage area, and it's not necessarily where the effort is not in putting them in exactly the way that I need it in order to turn it on, that as soon as Shabbos is ready, I'm now in a better position than I would have otherwise been, because then again I've used Shabbos to prepare. So using the dishwasher as a storage place is fine as long as it's being done in a way that it's not totally ready to be done after Shabbos, and also rinsing them off. In other words, if you always rinse off because you know that your dishwasher needs that in order to get them clean, and that's why if I look at what you're doing, I say, why are you rinsing off your dishes before putting them away? Well, because when my dishwasher runs, I need this to do it. So then, again, what you're doing on Shabbos is using Shabbos to prepare for after Shabbos, and the only reason why you're rinsing them off is because you need to do that anyway. Now, rinsing them off is a little bit tricky because one of the issues in terms of hachana is the last thing, is letter E, is preventing a loss also, and or preventing damage from being done. So certain types of food that if they get caked onto your dishes, so then it's not just a matter of my dishwasher won't be effective, it's a matter of it becomes like super grody that they get stuck on there. So there's a fine line, and I don't know how else to say this other than the fact that this is how a lot of the books and Svarim describe it, as a light rinsing so that the dishes don't become disgusting is fine, but it can't be that you're doing it to prepare for the dishwasher to run. I'm not in the kitchen enough to really know how to define that line, but the concept is one in which there's a difference between preparing for use and so that things don't become overly disgusting. How much water? It's hard for me to know. I don't know how to quantify that, but that's the concept of in terms of figuring out, like, what is it that I'm doing right now? Am I preparing that my dishwasher? Am I preparing making things easier for me to be done after Shabbos, or just this is going to be gross if I allow this to stay here? It's a fine line, but those are the concepts. Yeah.
You have non-Jewish help cleaning up. They can wash the dishes.
So a non-Jew on Shabbos can only do for you that which you could do yourself.
Well, then how is it that all the shuls, to my knowledge, in the Atlanta area that are Orthodox have people cleaning up that are not Jewish, their stuff?
Like what kind of stuff?
Well, like their dishes or bowls or whatever. And from Kiddush.
So that's going to be a step. There's a major amir la'akum what you can have a non-Jew do. So a non-Jew who is hired under, there are certain circumstances in terms of the way that they're paid and the way that they're working, whether or not when it is that it needs to be done and on which time. In other words, if a non-Jew needs to have something done by Sunday morning and they choose to do it on Shabbos, for example, let's say you give your cleaners. So you give them your cleaner stuff on Friday and you want to pick it up on Monday morning, so they can do whatever they want, whether or not they do it on Shabbos, they do it on Sunday, they do it on Monday morning, that's all up to them. They're doing that on their own.
But the shul help that comes in to set up for Kiddush and leave, clean up dishes.
So that could be, whatever happens practically in the Orthodox shuls of Atlanta, again, we could talk about separately, but the issue is that the principle is a non-Jew is only permitted to do on Shabbos for a Jew that which the Jew himself could do. So in other words, let's say, for example, I'm allowed to clean up a dish if I needed the dish. If I'm allowed to clean my plate, so I can't use hot water. But since I'm allowed to clean a dish, so if my non-Jewish help is going to clean that same dish for me, if it's easier for him to use hot water, he could, because the act that he's doing of cleaning could be done without the hot water. He just chooses to do it in whatever way he wants to. But the act that he's doing, I'm allowed to do. If he can't do laundry, no matter how he's going to do it, because I can't do laundry, so he can't do laundry for me. So you always look at what is he doing, and can you do that yourself? So if you're allowed to wash the dish, then he's allowed to wash the dish.
He's cleaning the dishes to put them away so that we get for next
hour. So in your house... In your house, you'd not be allowed to have a non-Jew clean your dishes if you couldn't clean the dishes yourself.
Okay.
And that would technically be true in a shul as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this rinsing with cold water, of course.
Yeah.
But are you allowed to put some soap in it? Like when you have a lot of, let's say you serve chicken to shop, and, you know, if you leave the dishes out, or, you know, it can bring bugs.
Right. So that's what I'm trying, that's the concept I'm trying. In other words, something which you're doing to prevent bugs or something that would make it impossible to clean later because it gets so caked on, that you're allowed to do because you're no longer preparing for after Shabbos, you're just preventing something negative from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have to use a liquid soap on that, you could do. That would be the example. In other words, the reason why I find it so much more difficult to quantify today is because we have much less of a bug problem than we did 500 years ago. Our homes are generally much cleaner, and sanitary conditions are far better, even in the summer, than they were 500 years ago throughout the whole world. So when the halacha discusses rinsing in terms of that fine line, it was much less of a fine line between cleaning to prevent damage and being infested with all sorts of bugs. Today, you know, if you put it in your oven, even leave it on your counter for 5-6 hours. You know, happens in my house all the time. Forget Shabbos, where a dish ends up dirty on the counter for a couple hours, and it's not like we walk in the next morning and like the whole house is roach infested. We don't live in those kinds of houses anymore. But that kind of washing you could do on Shabbos because that's not preparing; that's to prevent sometimes. And if you're afraid of bugs or whatever, you can. It's the line is a lot finer now between washing to prepare to clean and washing to prevent the type of damage. But you can do that conceptually. Yes, the answer to that is.
Mm-hmm. If you routinely do not have dirty dishes, and that's just very normal, that it's also an effortless thing for you to wash your dishes or rinse them and put them in your dish, if that's what you do all the time and you never have a dirty dish around.
So, I it's hard for me to say it's effortless, but I haven't heard that from any women who tell me that, you know, doing the dishes is effortless.
No,
but yeah, but it's routine.
To have dishes, I mean, they're really in pain if they have dishes in the sink.
Right. So that's where the issue becomes a lot. In other words, that issue which you were discussing was like, I feel the need to have, you know, a clean area. So the difference. It's like I hear the mindset, but like in my mind, and I think this is where the halacha comes in. But it could be that I'm not right about that. It's like getting them away so that your kitchen is clean accomplishes that without having to clean them. In other words, the act of cleaning them.
Not in some people's minds.
I see you share that mindset.
Yeah, but there are homes that literally, one, may not have a dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
Two, have light go on if the oven is open door.
Right, so there's no air.
And there's no counter space.
Yeah, so then again, in other words, so now again, you're not prepared. In other words, in that situation, I am not preparing for after Shabbos by washing my dishes.
No, it's just...
In the same way that I can clear my dining room table, that's not considered preparing because who wants to walk into a home on Shabbos afternoon at 4 o'clock and it looks like we just finished lunch and it looks disgusting. I don't want to do that. So I'm allowed to clear my table. That's not called preparing. That's called tidying up. If you have that situation in your kitchen...
Mm-hmm.
So then the same thing, the cleaning of those dishes, that's not preparing for after Shabbos. That is because, what am I going to do? I need my kitchen clean. Like, I need my bedroom clean. Like, I can make my bed so I can clean it. That would be okay. And if in that situation, because you aren't preparing. In a situation where what you're doing is, and I was like, I got to do all the dishes. I got to clean them after Shabbos. So, I'll do this now. Right, like, so then it is subjective in the sense of, you know, setting a table, moving chairs around, it can be an act of preparing, it can be an act of straightening up. It's a very subjective, like, when you're not allowed to, again, because I want to just stress this again, the entire concept of preparing is where the action you're doing is inherently permitted on Shabbos. By definition, when we're in this discussion of hachana, preparing, because if what you're doing wasn't allowed on Shabbos, we don't need hachana. You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. It's that the action is completely okay to do on Shabbos. It's just that you're doing it in order to prepare for something after Shabbos. So that becomes very subjective in the sense of, you could be washing your dishes because I don't have any place to put them. I don't have a dishwasher, I don't have a dishpan, I don't have an oven, I don't have anywhere to put them, and I need counter space. So there's no difference between clearing your dining room table and clearing your kitchen table, if you have nowhere else to put them. But I think it's generally assumed that washing dishes has a lot of exertion. It requires energy, effort, and time to wash dishes. And therefore, inherently, this is an act of you're doing something. It's not as easy just to say, like, I'm just quickly, you're cleaning the dishes. So it's generally assumed that if you can put them away in a way where your area is clean and tidy, then there's no reason to wash them, to spend the time and energy on Shabbos washing them, if you can accomplish the same thing without it. Now, I can't get it, like, if there's a mindset that says, like, I can't deal with dishes in my oven. It just doesn't work. Like, even if I have the oven space, or I have the dishwasher, I can't, it's like, okay, that's the difference. In general, the starting point of the halacha is, because of the energy and effort involved in washing dishes, if you can just get them away, do that, and don't actually spend that time on Shabbos washing them. That's the default, that's the starting point. And you can have a nice, clean, tidy kitchen without it, and we'll deal with it after Shabbos. But I don't have to. It causes such a. The Chazal. They didn't want you sitting over the kitchen sink washing dishes on Shabbos. And it's like, well, why are you doing that? So you say, well, you said, I don't like a dirty kitchen. So okay, if you can't get, if there's no other way than having a non-dirty kitchen, but so put them. There's nowhere else in your house where you could put them that you don't have to spend all that. Like, you don't want to. I mean, it's so, to me, like, I don't want to walk in and see. Like, at Shabbos afternoon, I want to see a woman slaving in the kitchen cleaning her dishes. Like, I wouldn't want to see that. If she needs the dishes, okay, but washing a dish, I'd like to put them away and do it after Shabbos. It's to create that atmosphere. But if you tell them, like, no, this is, I need this. But the default is not that way. You know, that makes sense in terms of the parameters of what I'm trying to describe for a guy who doesn't wash a lot of dishes. Sorry
for that situation.
You know, there's a Mishnah in Ksuvus that says that a husband is obligated to buy for his wife, according to his means, a certain number of domestic help in the house. And the Mishnah actually lists, if he can afford one, then he has to have one, and then the help that he hires takes care of responsibilities A, B, and C in the house. And if he can afford two, then he has to buy two and hire two that will do A, B, C. There's a whole hierarchy that says these are your obligations if you can afford to take care of these particular things. And I remember hearing from someone, like, one of the things what had to do with certain things around the house, like, you are obligated, like, if you don't have a dishwasher, you are obligated to buy one. Like, it says in your tshuva, you are obligated to provide your wife with a dishwasher. However, we know if you need both, that's fine, whatever it may be. So I'm a believer of that. We have two dishwashers in order to make sure that I don't end up doing them. So that way, this way, they get taken care of. Yeah.
Is there also a problem with soaking hard or soft things on the dishes or something?
To loosen them up?
No, something with, like, if you don't soak it right away.
Because it's going to harden and it's going to soften again. I saw that with using, like, a lot of hot water in terms of where it's going to be. Like, some people have
something like this cholent, because it's, like, solidifies and then
And then it's going to soften again. If it's not hot, I don't know if it's such a problem just in the soft. If it's not hot water where it's going to, I don't think that's such a change. I don't think so. I'm looking to confirm. But
it doesn't have to do with, like, either, you know, taking it off the table and stick it into the tub of water right away versus just letting it sit and sticking it in.
I don't think it should make such a difference. Okay. Anything else with the dishwasher?
So, along with that,
It's finished at 3 o'clock, and it's all crusty, and you'll have to fill it with cold water and soap.
Right, so same question. So in other words, I say, like, why are you doing that?
Huh?
Why are you doing that?
So it's not so hard to clean it.
Yes, yeah, so no, again, like that's probably the answer that most people would give. So that this is this fine line between, so I'm doing this now so that it's, am I doing this to prevent some type of damage, which technically is also part of that, because it's going to be harder for me. In other words, let's take a theoretical case. If it would be exactly the same amount of effort if I were to soak it on Friday and Saturday night, it would be no different. In the same way that if I soak it now, it's going to soak for 6-7 hours, and then by the time Shabbos is over, it'll be ready to go. I could do the same thing Saturday night. Like, there's no more energy or effort that would go into it, then the answer would be no, you couldn't do that on Shabbos, because the only reason why you're doing that now is to save the time that you'd have to wait after Shabbos. It's not any more difficult to clean. You do the same thing after Shabbos. You'd fill it with water and soap, you'd let it soak for 6 hours, and you'd clean it. It's not any harder. It's just that you want to clean it on Saturday night, and if you first have to start soaking it after Shabbos, so then in that kind of scenario, then the answer is no, you can't do that, because it's clear the only reason why you're doing it now on Shabbos is because you want to be able to clean it on Saturday night, and it needs to soak for 4 hours, so you don't want to start that at 9 o'clock at night. You want to start it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So in that kind of scenario, the answer would be no, you would not be allowed to do that on Shabbos. If I don't soak it on Shabbos afternoon, then it would take me more time on Saturday night than it would have otherwise taken me. So then what you're doing is not preparing, you're trying to prevent damage, which is, meaning, wait more time, then that would be okay. I just don't know that that's true. I don't know enough about cleaning children pots, but that would actually make a difference, that if it sat from 2 in the afternoon or 3 in the afternoon when you finished eating, and you know you didn't soak it until 8 o'clock at night, that it would take all that much. So you fill it with water, you let it soak overnight, and you clean it Sunday morning. I don't know that it's true that it actually is going to be harder to clean, as opposed to just having to shift the time that you have to wait. But if it is harder to clean, then that's no longer preparing. Then it's just trying to minimize the damage that would be done. Okay, just the last two things on this list of things that are considered preparing. You know, setting up room for Motzei Shabbos. And again, as opposed to cleaning, I'm allowed to clean up, and my house should be neat. But I'm not allowed to set up. I'm hosting a bar mitzvah, Shabbat bracha, Saturday night, whatever it is that I'm doing. So if I look at you and say, I see that you're setting up for that, then that's obviously not okay. But if you're just cleaning up, then it's okay. Cleaning up a playroom, cleaning up a bedroom, cleaning up a dining room, a kitchen. Even though there's only 2 hours left of Shabbos, you're not required to live in a mess even for 2 hours of Shabbos. Shabbos should be nice, and you're allowed to clean up as long as what you're doing is cleaning up because you need the space or you want the space to look nice, and not because you're hosting on Saturday night and you don't have enough time then, and you're cleaning up. Because again, these are all subjective things because of the fact that the activity is inherently okay, and it's just a matter of not using Shabbos to prepare for after Shabbos. And throwing food for the next day, I threw in there, this is most relevant again on Yontif, when we have the 2 days of Shabbos and Yontif, and you want to start defrosting things, and you forgot to take it away. So you can't take it out on Shabbos from the freezer, because it's clearly not for Shabbos, because it's going to be rock solid all day Shabbos. You just want to start the thawing process, so that would also be a problem doing that on Shabbos for Yontif or for Yontif to Yontif or any of those combinations. Okay, the last thing, just preventing a loss, which I've mentioned, that would include like bringing in shoes or a stroller if it begins to rain and you have stuff outside. So even though I don't need that stuff now, but I'm allowed to bring it in, not because I'm preparing my shoes or my stroller or whatever is out there, I don't want it to get ruined, and all of those things, those are not within the realm of Hachana. Okay, just a couple last things. Let's run through this. Number 3 is called Uvdin Decho, which translates into weekday activities. The sages also prohibited certain activities, which again would technically not be a problem, but because they are defined as weekday type of activities that they didn't want us doing on Shabbos. Some of the ones that relate to the kitchen, there are a couple of other ones, but again, focusing on our kitchen, is using a grater on cheese, meat, or eggs. What's the problem with using a grater on cheese, meat, or eggs? Nothing. One of the prohibitions that we learned about earlier is called tochein, is grinding. You're not allowed to grind something into small little pieces, but that only applies to naturally grown products which come from the ground. Your technically would apply to a wheat kernel, but more likely would apply to a pepper, cucumber. You can't grind those up into very thin type slices. as part of the grinding. In other words, since there's a prohibition to grind, grinding would be the weed, would be the actual prohibition of grinding. So part of that is cutting things into various, but it doesn't apply to meat, cheese, or eggs. Those are not naturally grown products which come from the ground. Therefore, there's no prohibition of grinding, which means you could take a grinder, technically on Shabbos, and grind up your egg salad or whatever it is that you would want to grind up your cheese. You could do that on Shabbos afternoon. There's no problem. Except that a grinder is defined as a weekday-type kitchen product. There's certain utensils made for specific purposes, and therefore, while you can take a knife and a fork and grind up your egg or your cheese, whatever it is, you couldn't use a specific grater, and the potato masher also is brought into that category where the poskim would not allow you to use a potato masher, even though, again, you might otherwise have been allowed to, but you can't use things which are designated. The same thing with the peeler, peeling a cucumber. So if you wanted to, you can peel a cucumber, but you can't use your regular peeler for that same reason. You could use a knife, or however you want to peel it, but you can't use a peeler because of uvdin dechol. It becomes like a weekday activity. There are numerous other things, but those are the ones that relate most to the kitchen.
So any specialty product?
Yeah, generally. Generally, that's right.
Shabbos and Yom Kippur, just Shabbos?
Both. I'm almost positive about both.
Can you use a peeler on Yom Kippur?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's the same thing on both.
Can you use a specialty item for one thing on something else?
Like you want to use a carrot, I mean you have like a carrot peeler and you want to use it for a cucumber?
Twice the cheese.
Twice the cheese, yeah. That's a weird use, but it would actually...
Or
maybe a potato masher to mash it in. It's a potato masher.
Right. But I mean, you never would do that during the week, but that's a good question. I'm not sure if it becomes where the item itself becomes not used, or just for that particular item. I don't know. Good question. I know. Listen, the truth is, I go home and I feel like I earned my paycheck when you're in my class. So otherwise, I feel like, well, this is a joke. I think I just got up there, I lectured, and nobody said anything to me. But now I go home and I smile and I say, this was a good day's work. So thank you.
I can understand the grating, but I don't understand the peeler.
What? Because
why not be able to use a carrot peeler to take off?
It's because it's a specialized tool, so to speak. It has a specific purpose. So when, even though I'm allowed to do the activity, but I can't do it in the way that it looks like a regular weekday kind of activity.
Is a scissor considered a weekday?
Like, we want like open up a package or something.
Yeah, or snip, like if you have kitchen scissors, snip lettuce.
Yeah, no, you're definitely allowed to use the kitchen scissors to cut those for that purpose. Why is that not? It's an interesting question. You can. I don't know if it's just considered less because it does so many other things that you use it for that it's more generalized. But it's an interesting. I'm almost positive that you can.
You can?
I believe so. Using the kitchen scissors to like open things. Yeah. I maybe I'm wrong on that. I thought you could. I'll double check on that also.
Going to be up late tonight?
Yeah, I know. Let me get to this little crisp before you ask any other questions. I think so. I have to, but maybe get thrown to that. I didn't see it listed in those things, and I recall having seen that it was okay, but I will double check.
Can you use scissors to cut open a package of potato chips?
Yeah.
You can turn
Yeah. Things that you're allowed to cut. In other words, a pair of scissors would be considered muksa unless you need it for its sarach gufa. I need it for whatever it's there for. Whereas you couldn't just move them around, but if I needed it. But it's always ideal with a pair of scissors, for example, to use something else. In other words, whenever the halacha discusses it, you could use your pair of scissors. It's like, if I don't have a knife that would work to accomplish what I need, and I need it, then I'd be allowed to use my pair of scissors. But otherwise, I don't really need my pair of scissors and don't use them. When I don't have something that would otherwise work, I could use that. But if I had something else, then leave the scissors alone.
Usually when you cut a big bag of potato chips, if you cut it with a knife, sometimes it rips open.
Well, you need that to happen. I know that we're about to get to how you open a bag of potato chips. You can't open a bag of potato chips in a way that you're left with a functional bag. So you need to open your bag of potato chips with a Ziploc bag ready to, after you slice it open, that if you want to eat them all, that's great. But if you want to be able to store them afterwards, your bag should not be left functional. We're going to get to that in a second. Your bag should not be left functional when you're done.
Why?
We're going to get to that in a second. Let's just go in order. Okay, number four is molid, creative changes. Literally means giving birth to something, creating something different. The way that this comes up in the kitchen would be changing the state from one thing to another on the course of Shabbos. So where that would be an issue is like whipped cream from a pressurized can. Inside the can, the whipped cream is, I believe, a liquid. And then when you, it comes out as whipped cream. Similarly with the hand soaps they make, which foam. Like you see them inside the little container and it's a liquid, and when you push down on the top, whatever magic happens in there, it comes out. Yeah, that's what happens. I'm not sure what goes on in there, but it's something magical. Because all of a sudden it's like foam. It's like, wow. So in the same ways, you can't take these ways of changing the substance. So those are things to be avoided. You could use a liquid soap, but you can't take a solid soap and change. The reason why you don't use a bar of soap on Shabbos is because when you take your bar of soap and use it on your hands, you take what was once a solid, and now you make it into this liquidy, bubbly kind of thing. But from a liquid into that liquidy, bubbly kind of thing is really not considered a major change. So you can use a liquid soap on Shabbos, but you can't use a bar of soap on Shabbos. So for that same reason, when you have this liquid and when you press on it, it turns into a foam, which then all you turn over and nothing, it does, it's solid there in your hand. So those should be avoided on Shabbos. The whipped cream, there are those who are lenient on that, but I put it together here as things which you, if you can avoid, I think would be a good thing to do. Yeah?
Just a little bit of pocket blazer on Shabbos?
Don't eat it.
No, can kids play with it or not?
Well,
because they wanted to know what was the issue, why they...
Yeah, I don't know, what would be the issue?
Sure, there isn't an issue.
I don't know, you know, we got rid of Play-Doh in our house the first Pesach that came around after one of our kids used to play with Play-Doh, and Play-Doh is chametz on Pesach. So we just stopped by. We threw it all. We never bought it again. I haven't had it. So I don't know what the issue would be with playing with Play-Doh.
There is no issue.
I don't think so. Forming something out of it, maybe. What do they make out? Just like different shapes?
I mean,
it's
like
not permanent.
Yeah.
But you could be mixing colors. You know, ask three rabbis, get six answers on that one, I bet.
So I'm not going to bother answering it because I don't know. I don't know what the problem would be. I'm sure there might be one. I'm not familiar with one.
No problem.
I don't want to say definitively because I didn't look into it. But I don't.
If you want to play with Play-Doh, you go to his house.
Yeah, I don't have any. There's no Play-Doh in my house. Certainly not the month before Pesach. Yeah. Now, making ice on Shabbos is an interesting discussion. Is that considered changing the form, taking from a water and changing it into a solid, or vice versa? Vice versa, for sure, you know, taking ice cubes and putting it on the table is fine. There's no problem with having a big bowl of ice for people to take on the table, even though if not everybody takes the ice, it's going to melt and you're going to be left with a bowl of water. That's not a problem. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Making ice from water on Shabbos is a little bit more tricky. There are a bunch of different opinions. What is generally accepted is you should not do that unless you need it on Shabbos. Meaning, if you need ice on Shabbos and you'll have enough time to put your ice cube makers into the freezer and have the ice on Shabbos, then you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. But because there's so many different opinions, it's otherwise avoided. So, you know, if you need it, you can. And it's a fine thing to do if necessary on Shabbos. Another thing that people are careful with the ice is the freezers, the way that they're done today, if you take out too much ice, you're going to kick into motion a whole thing that's going to on its own start generating more ice. So it's also ideal to, before Shabbos, click that setting off so that even if you clear out all the ice, it's not going to start kicking in the motor and filling it up again, because then your act of taking it out is causing all of that to kick into place. So it's best to turn that off as well on Shabbos. Okay, opening bags is really a massive topic, which I'm going to do in about 3 minutes. We're just going to go through some of the basics. But because I say that it's massive just in the sense of being aware that hopefully we'll cover this in a way that's clear, but it is actually technically very, very complicated, all the different issues involved. There are four different malachas, four different activities which are potentially a problem when it comes to opening different types of packages. You have tearing, tearing something open, which is generally tearing is one of the malachas. You have opening, opening up Sichas Tiv, we open up a canister or a vessel, completing the job, makeh v'patish, and erasing when you deal with lettering on the packages that you're opening. So when you go through this topic, each type of bottle or container you're talking about, like we go through all the different options, like what is a problem, what's not a problem. Here are the basics. When it comes to bottle caps, so you have, let's take our classic, let's start from the bottom actually, your beer bottle. Beer bottle is fine to open, you know, the twist off caps, because when you open it, nothing is done. This is a good place to start because we could just quantify what's happening. What's happening when you take off that cap? Really nothing. In other words, because the bottle was created, the glass bottle exists on its own, the metal cap exists on its own. When the two are put together, it's not like a soda can which is completely sealed and now you're opening something by poking a hole in it for the first time. You're just removing the cap which was on top of it, and the cap is not changed, the bottle is not changed, you're just separating two things which have been together, and therefore there's no problem with doing that on Shabbos. When you get the bottle cap...
Well, that's the church key thing, where you have to open it. No, not all beer bottles have the twist. You still have to open them.
I don't drink beer. I don't know what you're talking about.
When you have to pry...
It's like
you
use the top of soda.
Yeah.
You have to use it's called a church key, but a bottle opener.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it as a church key, I'm sure.
No, what's,
well,
what's a church?
But you know, the whole thing, you put on the cap and pop it up.
You bend the cap, right?
Yeah, but
you're talking.
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem. That's a, yeah. In other words, the thing is you pop it. Yeah, in other words.
So you said twist caps. So
yeah, the same thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Well,
yeah.
You can twist it off of beer caps without a box.
I mean, I usually just bite them off, but it's really the same. Okay. Hey, when it comes to. Sorry, it's just to wake you up because it's getting late. I'm sorry. Soda bottles are tricky because soda bottles have the type of caps that there's a ring, there's a separate plastic cap and it goes on top of the bottle, but then it's stripped on top of there with a ring on the bottom that it's on top there as one piece, then as you twist it off it becomes to the ring is left behind and now you have a cap, and there are a bunch of different opinions as to whether or not you can or cannot do that on Shabbos. As in all these situations where there are many opinions who say that one shouldn't, it is ideal to open the bottles before Shabbos, your soda bottles. If you didn't, there are plenty of opinions, significant opinions, to rely on that say that you're allowed to open up a soda bottle on Shabbos. You'll find many people who are very particular to open up their soda bottles on Shabbos, and they won't do it on Shabbos, and if they haven't, they forgot. But there are many significant opinions who hold that it is okay, and I asked her if I was like, what should I say? There's like, there's so many opinions. That's what you should say. There are like a lot of opinions. If you want, if there like is an area where you want to work on your observance of Shabbos, this is a nice one to work, because there are plenty of opinions that say don't do it. So this is a intelligence stringency to take on, because there are significant opinions that say that you shouldn't. There are also significant opinions that say that you can. And so you have what to rely on if you do, and it's just one of those things where there has not been in the last 40 years where these soda bottles of 50 years, whatever, that have been produced, a definitive psak halacha amongst the various poskim that say yes or no. We just don't have a definitive opinion on this particular matter. And so again, if you want to, you know, be stringent and open them before Shabbos, you should. And if you don't, there is what to rely on to open it. The old grape juice bottles are a different story. The old grape juice, meaning some of them are now making that hard plastic bottle cap on the grape juice bottles, but most of them are still not that way. And though the truth is, the sparkling grape juices are always not that way. They're the sheet metal. Some of the new, the regular grape juice, Ketim, has really been making the harder plastic ones, which are easier to open. The old fashioned ones, let me clear what I'm talking about. You know, so the sparkling grape juice still has them. Yeah, it's a very thin metal cap. So the way that those are made is by, you know, they have the bottle, the glass bottle, and they have a sheet of metal, and then it's like stamped on top, but it never was a cap. Never existed as a cap, as opposed to the regular traditional soda bottle. It was a cap, and there was a bottle, and they forced the cap on top with enough pressure. But the thin sheet metals, it wasn't a cap, it didn't exist as a cap, it existed as a sheet of metal, it was clamped on top. Now when you separate it, you've actually created a cap for the first time. It never existed in a separate form other than it's attached to the bottle. So breaking that off on Shabbos becomes a different issue aside from just opening up the bottle in terms of creating that cap. And therefore the way to deal with those is to actually puncture a hole in the top of the grape juice before you open it. They take a regular fork or whatever, a fork will usually do the trick. You poke a hole into that. When you now you take it off, you actually have not created a new vessel, a little cup, because it wouldn't function as a cup because it has a hole in the bottom.
How is the aluminum any different than the plastic?
You know, the plastic, because the plastic existed as a cap. In other words, they took a cap and a bottle and they forced the two together as a seal.
It's a metal ring and you're breaking it.
Right, so all that you're doing is you're now knows that it existed as a cap, it just had an extra metal piece that you're leaving behind, which is where that debate comes in if you can or can't do that.
Got it.
But the sheet metal, it wasn't a cap, but they didn't put a cap on top of it.
Right,
it was just a sheet of metal and they just clamped it down.
So then the question is, if you open the sparkling grape juice before Shabbos and close it,
that would also be fine. Yeah, totally.
Then you don't have to puncture holes.
100%, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
100%.
So the cans are not on here.
Right, those are too complicated.
not on paper.
Soda cans would be like metal cans, which we have in the bottom there. In terms of you need to like you open like a tuna fish can, so you don't open it the whole way, and then you empty it and you should throw it out. The whole concept is basically not creating a usable utensil on Shabbos, which is where the opening of the whole discussion in the Gemara is, in which you puncture a hole and you've created now. Out of something that was sealed, now something which is a usable, you could empty it, you could fill it, you could empty it, you could fill it. Before, it's just now it's fully sealed. It's now only a storage container. When I puncture a hole in it, I've now created a cup of sorts, or you know, which I could empty and refill and empty and refill. That's where the discussion, the Gemara gets off of into. So the soda cans, the metal cans, those are all where those issues are. And again, there are many, many who say not to open it, and if you do open it, then to sort of ruin it and discard it, so that you haven't actually been left with that and created it. But it's a little bit more than that. I'm not doing it total justice as far as that goes. But I want to get back to the cardboard boxes and the paper and plastic bags is the same issue. Whereas if you open it from the top in a nice tidy way, like you normally would, what you've done is you took something which was only a storage container, it's a sealed thing, and had no other use other than holding the items that were in it. When you open it, now you have a kli, you have a vessel that's been created through your opening it, that whether we do or we don't, can be emptied and filled and emptied and filled, and you've created something which didn't have that purpose before. It was just a sealed compartment, and therefore, when you open your cardboard boxes, your cereal boxes, your paper, plastic potato chips, all of those things, if you're opening them on Shabbos, they should be opened in a way, either from both sides, and you empty it, or where you slit it down the backside, where you are not creating something that is usable again after you've opened it. So you're allowed to destroy something to get to the contents inside. That's always okay. You're being mekalkel, you're ruining it, because you need the contents, which is allowed. But it has to be in a way in which the item basically becomes unusable through that process. So if you're in a household where you use a lot of cereal, this becomes a big issue, because generally we like to keep all the boxes intact, the cardboard box and the plastic box inside. And if you get stuck, you didn't take care of that before Shabbos, and so it's like you have to take out your big Ziploc, and you gotta so that you're not doing that on Shabbos. You're splitting both sides of the cardboard box, and then you open up the plastic thing and you empty out the contents. But you're allowed to do that, or you just eat a lot of cereal Shabbos morning.
Is this for food only, or is this also for plastic forks?
Yeah, other stuff. Yeah.
So anything.
Right, if it's sealed beforehand and you then want to open it, the truth is the cereal box, the tops of the cereal box, some of these things are not really an issue because they're not really sealed. Some of the plastic fork containers. It's really just like a little tiny piece of glue or tape that's holding it together. You're not really creating anything, as opposed to the plastic bag that a cereal comes in. That's completely sealed across the top. That's a much bigger issue than sometimes the outside cardboard box. Some cardboard boxes are much more sealed than others, where it's really a quick slip of the finger. That's not really considered opening anything. You're not creating anything new. It wasn't ever sealed. All they did is they took the tooth. In other words, when they manufactured it, they just put a little piece of glue. But that's like a sealed vessel that you're opening, as opposed to some are actually sealed shut, and you have to open them up.
Your Ziploc bag sealed, because you can take a liquid and flip it upside down. So how do you use a Ziploc bag?
Right. Right, you're not creating another. The fact that it opens and closes, that whether it's open or closed on Shabbos, is already in the form. It exists as a bag before Shabbos, on Shabbos. All you do when you open and seal it, it's not really ever sealed in a way where you're opening it is creating something like a soda can is sealed. So when you pop that soda can open, so now you've created a new something which didn't exist before Shabbos.
If you had a new bag or Ziploc.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't created for the leftover soup you're going to put in there. You pour your soup and you seal it, and then you can turn your soup upside down.
That bag existed in that form before Shabbos. In other words, you didn't just by snapping them together, you didn't create anything new. The bag existed, whether it was closed or open before Shabbos. You haven't done anything by opening or closing that, as opposed to a sealed can. When you puncture a hole in that, your action is changing the functionality of what you have. Whereas you're not changing the functionality of the bag by closing, you're using it, but you're not changing what it is in its essence. And all wrappers, the last thing on the list, all wrappers and protect, those are fine to open. Other things which are sealing up, those you're allowed to open on Shabbos. Your wrappers and protective seals, there's again nothing fundamental is being changed just because they wrap something in a seal. The idea is taking a container and creating a new type of vessel out of something which is just wrapped. You're not creating, you're just getting to whatever it is that you want to, but you're not recreating the vessel. I will mention on all of these things something which was mentioned way back when, which is the idea of erasing or ruining letters. It is ideal in all of these situations to open them in a way that you do not tear or rip anything. That's the ideal. In a situation, unless it's impossible to open without ripping it, when you shouldn't do it, but let's say it's possible to open something, you just have to be careful. So you should be careful, and it is not the biggest deal if you end up ripping a letter, because that's not, the malach of erasing is erasing in order to be able to rewrite. So it has to be a construct, even when you erase, the prohibition of the Torah is erasing in a constructive manner, and you're being destructive in this form of erasing. And especially in the way that things are written and printed on the wrappers, you should always try to open it in a way that doesn't rip the letters. But as I mentioned last time, it is not something that you need to. If it happens, it's not such a big deal. It's not such a major violation if it happens when you're if you can open it in a way that you don't have to rip it and you're trying to. So you know you be careful, but it's not.
Orange juice containers that have the little thing in
Yeah, so that you can't know. That's a classic example of something that you couldn't open. I was going to write them, and I was like, I haven't even seen one of those in so long.
Even if it has that peel thing or that full.
So there are two different types of. The old fashioned orange juice containers. You know, they're kind of like when I was a kid that they had. Remember the milk? You know, you open up the top and you push the thing in and you pull it back out. So those that you cannot open on Shabbos because. That's the same thing where it was totally sealed. It has its function now is only one of a storage container, and when you open that up, you're now recreating it because of the way that it had been sealed before. Now you're recreating it as a new type of vessel. So if you were to do that, you'd have to open it from the top and the bottom, basically ruin it and empty it into another type of container. That's what you have to do for those. Then they started making orange juice on the side with a little plastic container. So now that's something different because now what you have is a vessel which is a standalone vessel with a hole on the side, and they put an external plastic seal on top of it. So that's no longer where the vessel itself has been sealed up like a metal can or those old-fashioned orange juice. It has a hole in it and it's just being covered by a piece of plastic. So opening that is not in the same way as reopening a sealed orange juice container. And the way that you need to open that is with some type of machine, though you can't do it in the normal manner. But you should, because you still are in that way opening that, you should take the back of a fork or a knife and sort of like pop it off. That's what I was at.
If it has that paper or plastic seal, there's this like foil thing, you can take that off too?
Yeah. Those things are fine to take off.
I had to run out. Did somebody ask, can you open like a package of napkins or a package of paper plates?
Yeah, so those things, because you know, that's just like a wrapper. That's the last thing. The wrapper is protective seals. In other words, if I'm assuming the type of plastic around a bunch of plates, there's nothing left. When you open that, The plastic is a piece of, it's not a container. You haven't created a vessel. There's not. It's a piece of garbage. Yeah. So that's
unless,
totally fine.
Hold on. Unless you're opening like a stack of napkins, you're just going to open the top normally. You know, you don't want the...
Right. So, okay. So, and if it's one of those, like, you know, the like Sam's Club, you have like 300 napkins in it. And so, even, and I guess depending on how you... I don't know that it'd be... Those things are so flimsy, those kinds of... I don't know that that's considered a kli, like a vessel. It's just a big wrapper. I don't know that that's the same as like these hard cardboard or plastic containers.
But we're not supposed to tear things on Shabbos unless it's...
Yeah, so you, but that's for your... it's a destructive tearing for the for that which is inside. In other words, you're allowed to do any type of destructive tearing to get to something inside. So what we're always avoiding is constructive tearing, which I've created something of. If my tearing, my opening is... if I've created something new, that's what we're trying to avoid. If all that I'm doing is a destructive tear, that's the difference between the potato bag. And if I open the potato chips on the top in the normal manner, so even though I've done some tearing to get to what's inside, I've also now created a bag that I could use if I wanted to water my plants outside, which I couldn't do on Shabbos. I could have filled my potato bag with water. I've created something. Even though we never use it that way, I have created a new utensil. But if I slid it down the back, then all I've done is a destructive tear to get to the product inside, which is okay. So most of those types of wrapper situations are, you're not, nothing creative is happening with the tearing, you're just getting to the product inside.
Is there a way to use whipped cream that's in the can, the pressure?
In the Svarim it says no, because it's a changing of the form. Rabbi Prinsky told me that he asked Rav Tzvi Berkowitz this question in Baltimore, and he told him that it was okay.
Yay!
So in other words, if you open up the books, they'll put that on the list of things that you should not do because of like the soap, because it's changing the form. But I don't know the reason. Francis didn't know either. He said that's my Rebbe. So if people ask me, I tell them to use it because my Rebbe said it was fine. So I first presented it because in general you'll find not to use it, but there is a, you know, significant opinion, and yeah.
Oh, and this is going back to the heated utensil. So I have a coffee pot that I use as a teapot. So during Shabbos, you're not allowed to take the teapot off the heated element and pour in my cup and then put it back. So if it's full, it's 10 cups of tea.
You want to put a you want to.
It's in the heated element.
Or you want to put it back on the heated element.
It's
right. So those are. So that's what. That,
Shabbos.
Yeah, that was last week's discussion on Chazara.
So if
your five conditions are met, then you're allowed to. If the tea is fully cooked,
yeah,
and it's and the black. What's that? And there's a black. So the heating element is covered. If you put foil before, you know, on in between your elements and the thing, and you continue to hold it, and you had intention, then you'd allowed to put it back.
You need to hold it. To hold the pot.
Yeah.
So I mean, how else would I pour it?
You can't put it down.
Put it down.
If you put it down.
You hold it in your hand, pour it in the cup, and put it back.
Yeah.
And it just needs a.
It needs a sheet of tin foil. I'm not familiar exactly what you're talking about, but it would need, just like if you wanted to put your trolling pot back in the base, you would need to line the base with tinfoil. There has to be a bluch. There has to be something covering the heating element in order to be able to put it back on Shabbos. So since you're putting something onto a heating element on Shabbos, it would have to be covered by something.
Okay, so as long as it's covered, and I hold it and not put it down, and pour, and then go put it back in, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yay! Two yays.
I feel like I've been given a lot of misinformation, so excuse me for like being dumbfounded by this. One, I was told, you don't ever tear open packages of paper plates. You know, so if you haven't torn them open, too bad. Take something out of the cabinet. And then the other one that makes me crazy,
I don't know why that
I don't either, but I love yours so much better. Watching twist ties.
Yeah, twist ties are a problem. I should have put that on this list for Shabbos. Twist ties are, you can't undo or do two twists. And the reason for that is tying is a problem on Shabbos, like tying a knot. And a twist tie has the status of tying a knot.
can wrap it real tight around.
So you can wrap. In other words, because that doesn't have the status of a knot. But once you twist it twice, in other words, if you have the twist and just do once, that's also, that's like anything you could undo with a single finger. Just like tying a knot with your shoes. So a single bow is okay. A double bow already has the status of a knot. So tying a knot is one of the malachas of Shabbos. So once you create with your twist tie, so you can't undo a knot and you can't tie a knot. So when you get your challah from Kroger and you forgot to untie it before Shabbos, you can't untie the twist. You have to just rip open the bag, which you probably never did. You must be starving because you thought you couldn't open your plate, so you were like, you never eat.
Well, I always make my own challah.
Okay, you don't have to worry about that. Otherwise, you'd be starving. Yes, when you have a twist tie. So the worst, what happens to us often is we forget about that film before Shabbos, and you have a package of like six of the little challah rolls, and we just need one. You can't undo the twist.
And you're twisting it tighter and tighter so you don't mess up the twist and trying to pull it through. It was really funny.
Yeah, so what you need to rip open the bag.
Okay.
And then you take out your one roll and you put it in a Ziploc bag because your bag has not got a big gaping hole in it. But I don't know what they did. So the issue that happens with garbage bags also, the same thing on garbage bags, I'm glad you mentioned that as far as a Shabbos in the kitchen, is garbage bags. When you take out the garbage on Shabbos, So you can't knot the bag in a way that would be considered a problem, which would be either a double knot. If you have the string ties, for example, so you can do it once, but you can't do it a second time. That second time would be considered a knot, so you have to leave it only in once, and then after Shabbos you want to go back and tie it a second time, you can, but you can't tie the twist tie a second time on Shabbos. And if you use those twists for your garbage bags, you have the same issue. In terms of not being able to use, you could wrap, you know, you could twist the bag over and over to keep, hold it tight, but you couldn't with the twist tie. Do that twice. You could do a single bow. You can do, yeah. Just singly.
Tie a sneaker once. Do one bow.
A single bow, right?
Uh-huh.
You couldn't do the double bow.
How about I'm not being picky? How about the Dutch butterfly bow?
I know you do that all the time. Come on, admit it. Now I'm talking to him.
I will not admit it publicly. I will not even admit publicly that I know what you're talking about.
The bow that was used in Holland. It's called the Dutch butterfly.
Oh, the Holland one. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You don't pull it with one thing and it all
yeah.
comes undone.
So that should be fine. The rule is if with one finger, one hand, you could pull the whole thing out, then it's not really a knot. Okay. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for 3 weeks.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.